We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, my guy, Jack Emanuel. Jack, what's up?
Well, it's still somehow there is still news to talk about with the Brooklyn Nets. And thank you, Kevin Durant. Thank you, Kyrie Irving. Thank you, Carmelo Anthony, question mark.
Carmelo, yeah, it's sneaking in there. No, definitely. It's, you know, the second week of September and we're still talking about Nets news. It is nice, though, because we are very close to the season. Before we get into it, quick reminder, you can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Google Play, and YouTube. But, Jack, I'm going to pass it over to you.
Let's smash and get right into the Wall Street Journal article with Kevin Durant and Nick. Firstly, just what are your thoughts on the piece as a whole? I thought it was one of the best written, most intriguing pieces, and I love player deep dives, and I know you're a big Kevin Durant fan. I know I'm a big Kevin Durant fan, even despite, you know, all the sort of snake stuff. This just sort of purely illuminated what he is as a player and as a person in probably ways that maybe even Bill Simmons' podcast couldn't do.
I feel like I took away so much about Kevin Durant from this article. Maybe not as much about like the joining the Nets. There were some nuggets on that, but just the person he is and his mindset. I think you got a lot better idea. Then we had the live YouTube show with one of his friends last week. And I think just like those two combination with the Wall Street Journal article, like you mentioned, was extremely well written and well thought out. It's just like you have a better idea of who this guy Kevin Durant is as a person.
Definitely. And I think that he is who he is. And I think that it's simplistic to boil it down to that. But, and there was some sort of stuff where it was just like, you know, some days I hate the NBA, you know, he said before that, like, he has all love for OKC, but like in the moment right now, you know, he's contradicting himself saying like, you know, fuck those guys. he's just going to be honest. And I think that that's something that you, and if you don't, like, yes, you can dislike what he says, but you have to respect the fact that he says it, because in a media landscape, when it comes to sports media especially, we get contrite answers and forced answers and trade answers. But now, like as Brooklyn Nets fans, we have two of the guys who are maybe might not like, you know, sort of the media, specific sessions in the media, but when they do talk, it's always incredibly illuminating and it feels incredibly personal. And I think that's just the thing about Kevin Durant, that the people that do and are endeared to him, this sort of article sort of, you know, reflected that.
Yeah, it's like people complain about the vanilla responses or generic responses from NBA players or athletes in general, and then somebody comes through and says actually how they feel and you cry about it. Like, respect him for just saying how he feels. He's 100% telling the truth. It's not like he's making anything up. This is how KD feels, and he put it out there.
Yeah, and I think that you know, we'll talk about some quotes from it and such. And one thing from me that sort of helped sum up and was a big part of sort of understanding Kevin Durant is that he was at this massive Q&A at some conference, and, you know, someone asked him, what makes you so great? And like coolly and calmly and quickly, he said paranoia. And I'm just like, that's just like to know that and to just feel that and to be honest about that. Because like, I think that, you know, we all exist in like a heightened sense of anxiety. And I think that anxiety, when channeled, can be incredibly productive because it's, you're always wanting to do more. You're always wanting to do better. And that's Kevin Durant when it comes to basketball. This is a guy that just is never ending when it comes to his love for the craft of the sport, his love for talking about it, his love for being out there and playing it. So like, yes, it might seem like a really weird answer, but for me, how I interpret it, it was just like, it's just, it's almost oddly poetic in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it's the truth. And like, I mean, in some ways you think about like all-time greats or just people who are at the top of whatever they do, there is some type of paranoia. And I think this makes me think about a commercial. I want to say it was a Gatorade commercial, and it was KD and Dwayne Wade, and they're both having nightmares about the opposing player doing something to them. Yeah, yeah. And that's spot on. And that's like, you know, I kind of feel that way. And sometimes I don't want to say like my success is based off of paranoia, but you do have some anxiety and expectation for yourself that you don't want to lose an opportunity. And I think that's what he's talking about. Like, he was given these God-given talents to being a crazy good basketball player. And his paranoia is that he's not going to live up to that expectation or get to the highest peak that he can get to.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we'll speak about it before we get to the sort of net stuff that was outlined in the article. The one thing I also really liked is that like he doesn't believe in choking, in the fact that, and he's just like, look, I might miss the shot, but like to me, choking doesn't exist if I'm not taking the shot or whatever. And then like he said in the past before, where, you know, I think at a high school game where he missed the sort of free throw shot and he felt like he did choke in that sort of moment. And now the persona and his growth as an individual, as a player and as a man, I think I would have the same amount of love for Kevin Durant because he's a similar age to me, like 1 or 2 years older than me, and he's just figuring out who he is, what his passions are, what he wants in life as a man. And like to see that development at a person who's at a similar age sort of figuring that out going into their early 30s, it's something that I like can really resonate with, whereas like, you know, some of the kids will be more drawn to like LeBron James and Stephen Curry's of the world because they're just these otherworldly, you know, superheroes. And like, you know, I'm watching a show called The Boys now on Amazon, which is an awesome show, by the way, but it's like flawed superheroes in a way. And LeBron and Steph aren't that. They're sort of like the be-all and end-all. But were there any other takeaways non-Nets-wise that sort of for you, Nick, really stuck out that I've mentioned mine, but was there anything else from this really extensive, really thoughtful piece that sort of stuck out to you?
And just, I mean, getting on the points that you just touched on, it's almost like Kevin Durant is more relatable to someone who's in their late 20s, early 30s, where you're going through that struggle and trying to find yourself. And I really like the quote about like, you just like don't choke if you don't take the shot. And he says, if he misses, it's not my fault. Yep. It's the environment or someone else's fault. And a lot of people took this as like, oh, wow, he's just like pushing it all against him. What he's saying here is like, it's the environment. It's the defense or the player defending me. It's not me who choked. Me choking would be not taking the shot and not doing what I do. So I really like that quote. And I know a lot of people try to turn that around and make it as negative as possible.
Yeah, exactly. So any other little sort of tidbits? Highly recommended that everyone who hasn't read this article, probably everyone who's listened to this podcast has, because we're all Brooklyn Nets fans and Kevin Durant fans if we are listening and on the Brooklyn Buzz. But any other sort of mini takeaways about Golden State? I mean, it's been done to death, and, you know, about like, you know, his time there and in OKC we sort of touched on, or do you want to get to the Brooklyn Nets stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there's different points in there, but this article we could literally go through for like 2 hours. Let's get to some of the Nets stuff.
So for me, what I've got down in my notes, and I'm going to quote this directly from the article. This time around, shortly before the start of free agency, Kleiman, his manager, met Durant for lunch at Cipriani, a chic restaurant in Soho, and gave him one last overview of all teams and all his options. Durant said, all right, well, I'm going with Brooklyn, just like that. And we've heard Rich Kleiman say, like, he doesn't know what Kevin's going to do. We've heard Kevin Durant say, yeah, I didn't really speak to the Brooklyn Nets. I just sort of picked them. This article and what Kevin Durant said and what Rich sort of said reflects and sort of shows that was true. I was skeptical about it. I'm like, how can you not like just like call Sean Marks or call Kenny or whatever, or speak to the organization and just go, yeah, I like the Brooklyn Nets. You know, they've shown me love in the past, and sort of just be like, you know, to your business manager, he's just like, yeah, I'm going with Brooklyn, man.
Dude, honestly, this was probably just like, this was amazing. This just put a smile on my face. And like, we said it on here, we thought Sean Marks was lying when he said that he didn't know about KD signing. With, yeah, like, I mean, I'm sure he got it mentioned to him, but he didn't know for a fact until he saw the Instagram thing. Like, this is wild. And it just goes to show you the perspective that players have about the Nets, you know, from an opposing viewpoint, not only just, you know, on the court, but the organization, how they treat their players. And we kind of talked about this on the outlet, how Bobby Portis had mentioned that everybody knew that KD and Kyrie is going to the Nets. It's like players communicate a lot about different things, and the Nets have done a really good job, it looks like, in the player circles and making themselves viewed very highly.
Yeah, and I think that that speaks volumes to the organization. I'm hoping, while I'm in New York in the coming months around October, November, that I'm just going to like be on KD watch and try and find all the bougie restaurants around Manhattan, and maybe I'll bump into him and it'll be cool, because like, you know, KD seems pretty bougie and he's loving, you know, there are talks, you know, from this article as well that, you know, he's looking to make his move and he's looking to find a property there. And obviously he has that massive outlandish mansion in LA. So obviously he might be checking, you know, where Kyrie's living too. We spoke about that, you know, it feels like eons ago before when we spoke about pre-free agency when he was looking at houses around Manhattan and Brooklyn and such. But I guess we'll get to Kyrie and his best friend in the league.
One point that you kind of mentioned is like, it really matters that the Nets training facility is in Brooklyn. And I thought this was pointed out in the article and how players kind of prefer that, because KD mentioned how he just likes to wake up. He said not brush my hair or brush my teeth, just go straight to the facility and start shooting. So like, I think it really, players really value that the training facility is very close to Barclays Center.
Yeah, and then, you know, Joe Harris walks there. I think Theo Pinson, when we saw the Brooklyn Nets social media post sort of video, you know, he was looking for one. Spencer Dinwiddie, apparently, according to the New York Post, is looking for the highest penthouse in all of Brooklyn. Not sure how true that is, and we'll get to Spencer a little bit later in the pod, but the friendship of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant has been made known plenty of times, Nick. When he called him his best friend in the league, did it surprise you at all? Did it just reaffirm a lot of things that you already thought about?
Yeah, and I already thought that. So it really didn't. That was just like something I already knew. Like, I think it was pretty easy to tell that these guys have a different relationship. We saw all types of threads throughout the year. And before we knew they were coming to the Nets, it was a lot of Knicks-related stuff that did the work and saying that, all right, yeah, their best friends are going to go together, and that's why they're going to New York.
And I guess sort of asking you to be sort of an armchair psychologist here. what is it?
I don't have a major in this.
No, I'm making you Freud this shit up, my dude. What is it that you think draws these two, you know, sort of misunderstood superstars together? What is it about their friendship that you think like makes them different from, say, like LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and you know, Carmelo Anthony? What is it about this friendship, you know, if you're sort of to dissect it from just a fan perspective or just like an individual perspective? Why are these guys friends? What makes them have such a strong relationship? What is it about it?
I think it's just like, this can go right down to the simplest thing, and it relates to just like, you know, people on a different level. Is like, they just have viewpoints that are similar. They have personalities that are similar, and they just vibe together. That's just like something how it is. Like, when you meet somebody, sometimes you can just instantly tell when you're going to be friends, because, you know, the vibe that you get from them and just the things that you talk about and the way you view things, you're like, okay, like, I already know this guy's going to be one of my homies. And I just feel like those two just really vibe together and they communicate. Obviously, they're both elite basketball players at the highest level, work extremely hard at their craft. And they view things outside the box. You know, a lot of people just take it how it is in the NBA. These guys are willing to kind of push the borders and say things that are a little bit crazy or that people don't want to hear.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're unafraid to speak their minds. And I think that, you know, having those similar sort of personalities, they both have an indelible passion for the craft of basketball. You know, some people see it as a job. Some people use it as a platform for other sort of things. But these guys, and it's the way they play, and it's their love for the game. And yes, they're incredible superstars on and off the court. But the thing that matters to them most, at least at this point of their lives, is what they're doing on the court. And I think that, you know, that pure, you know, the respect there as well, I think that, you know, is one thing too that probably speaks volumes. And yeah, I think that, you know, two people just can click. And I think we see Katie and Kyrie sort of being sort of different cats, and there's nothing wrong with that. And it worked out well for the Brooklyn Nets, so I'm certainly not complaining.
Yeah, it works out great for the Brooklyn Nets.
Were there any other sort of Brooklyn Nets takeaways for you, Nick, from the article? It is now, seeing as I've looked at it a couple of times, I now have to pay for it, so I can't scroll through it anymore. Thank you, Wall Street Journal.
I had that issue when I was trying to view it on my phone. It would like tell me I had to log in or subscribe, so I was just trying to read everybody's quotes off Twitter until I got home to my desktop. But yep. The other one that stuck out, Durant decided to wear number 7 in Brooklyn because, you know, God rested on the seventh day after creating heaven and earth. And that almost signals, like, obviously this is early in the process. He hasn't even played a game with the Nets. It seems like he wants to finish his career in Brooklyn. That would just be the final chapter.
It certainly seems that way. And obviously, you know, we've heard him say before, I don't know how true it is, that he wants to retire when he's 35. We saw him wear hats throughout the season for the Golden State Warriors with the 7 on it. So it's sort of like, you know, a precursor to that. So, you know, I think that it's certainly a reasonable assumption to make from what he has said. I don't necessarily think we can read into anything that these superstars are going to do. They are incredibly, you know, they could change on a whim, and that's their prerogative. You know, they deserve that freedom to do what they want. If you are so good at what you do, you deserve to live and be compensated in a way and in whatever environment and context, you know, you want to be in. So I think it's more likely than unlikely that he finishes his career in Brooklyn, but we could see KD have a massive change of heart and go, well, look, Seattle might become a franchise in 3-4 years' time. And he's just like, look, man, Seattle gave me some vibes and he wants to go there.
He could buy part of the team and, you know, be a player slash owner. You never know.
Exactly. You know, LeBron James has spoken about it with Cleveland. So who knows? There's so much that can change in such a short space of time. We didn't even think we'd be speaking about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in this podcast, let alone thinking about their retirement plans. But, you know, I think that it's an odd way, odd number of choosing. But, like, you know, the meaning that it has to him, I think is really cool.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely something interesting. You see players pick numbers all the time for weird reasons. I thought that was actually, like, one that made sense.
Yeah, it definitely was. But great article. Looking forward to more Nets media as it continues to progress out. Hopefully Kyrie can do some pieces too. But I guess I'll touch on Kyrie a little bit before we move on to Spencer Dinwiddie and Carmelo Anthony, Nick. I sort of touched on it on his individual buzz, but I'll ask you directly. Do you read into any of Kyrie's unwillingness to talk to the media directly over this offseason?
No, because he put out that video of being in Brooklyn, like he was excited about it. He did what he wanted to do. And like I've said before on, I don't know if it was this episode or the last one we just did, we recorded so many today. He just maybe doesn't enjoy talking to the media. And I don't think it's a big deal. You don't want people prying at what's your decision making. Like some people just don't want that, especially, you know, media members that you don't know. You don't have relationships. It's not like they're your friends. So it's just like, and he's in a position where the media treated him, I guess, in a negative light. They made everything seem negative, especially on the way out of Boston, that they're just going to turn whatever he says into something negative, or at least that's a mindset he has right now.
Yeah, like a lot of these superstars have their sort of homies and really close sort of friends and close sort of relationships with media members, like Kevin Durant has Chris Haynes, LeBron James has Dave McMenamin, Kyrie Irving has Jackie McMullen. That's the person who I think of when he opens up and when there's a lot of profiles, where there's a lot of news, where there's a lot of quotes. It's generally a Jackie Mac piece on ESPN. In Brooklyn, I'm intrigued to see whether Jackie McMullen is reassigned. She's Boston through and through, so maybe she has to do dual duty. But who Kyrie Irving is going to want to within that media. And that's not to say, like, you know, we've got Sarah Kustok. He's professed a love for the Nets, the Yes media team, including Iron Eagle. Michael Grady's obviously awesome. He's developed some incredible relationships with the likes of Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, and Joe Harrison, and the rest. So I'm interested to see when he does start speaking, you know, what he's saying, who he's saying it about. It's almost like, you know, him not saying anything doesn't worry me, but when he does start speaking, like when Kevin Durant speaks, there's going to be plenty to dissect.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's just like there's going to be a lot to dissect. Obviously, Media Day coming up at the end of the month, I think the 24th or 25th, something along those lines. And that'll be our first chance to really dive deep into some Kyrie quotes.
Yeah, and we know that last year's media day pod that we did, when we sort of went through the quotes, it was all D'Angelo Russell, was all Caris LeVert. Now we've got some superstars to worry about, and then we've obviously got the Rodion Kurut sort of stuff, but we will avoid that. We've chatted about that, and there's no new news in relation to that. If there is, we'll obviously discuss it on the buzz, but there's nothing new to really report. And the same with Wilson Chandler, but something new that is to report, Nick, is Spencer Dinwiddie's contract. Shams Charania came out, and he said he's turning his NBA contract into a digital investment vehicle. I wasn't able to read the Athletic piece, but I've read quotes here and there. I watched The Jump earlier this morning. Does this surprise you at all?
No, and just to correct myself real quick, Media Day is the 27th, but I'm not that surprised because Spencer's an interesting guy. He almost is in the similar light to like Kyrie and Katie. He's outside the box, and from my understanding, what he's doing is creating a digital bond for himself. So someone can invest the money and they'll get the money back in the future because his contract is going to come. Obviously, he's not going to lose his contract unless something crazy were to happen, but that's not going to happen with Spencer. So he's just getting more money now to do whatever he wants to do. If is that an investment into one of his companies, or is that, you know, just using the money? It's a really interesting idea, and I'm just curious to why he's exactly doing it and what the purpose is.
Well, I know throughout the season that he's professed, a knowledge of Bitcoin currency and such. And it's funny, I type in Spencer Dinwiddie, and instead of like, you know, The Athletic or ESPN coming up, it's Business Insider.
Interesting.
So like, I'll read these dot points, and they've sort of surmised it pretty well. That he's planning to convert his contract into a digital investment and take an upfront payment. The digital token would allow Dinwiddie to trade future income for a smaller payment and invest the sum immediately. Investors into sort of, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie as like a stock, I guess, will be paid principal and interest as his contract would cover what he owes his bondholders. So he's using it sort of like as collateral.
Yeah.
And the move is the first in the NBA. And apparently, you know, this, if it works out, we could see other players follow Spencer Dinwiddie's mold. And we know we've spoken about on plenty of pods that, you know, he's a different sort of thinker. He's an intelligent guy. He graded incredibly well on his SATs, but there's a little bit of risk in this. And I think that I retweeted in jest, you know, I'm going to convert all my life savings into Bitcoin as well. I think that if this works out, and the fact that because he has, you know, tens of millions of dollars to sort of rest back on, that he has that confidence and he has that knowledge. So I think this speaks to Dinwiddie's intelligence and sort of willingness to explore different avenues to sort of increase his own sort of, you know, value and worth.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it's not something that I anticipated seeing like at any point this season or in even this current season with the NBA players, but Spencer's the guy to do it. And I'm intrigued to see how it works out and just like how it benefits him in the whole situation and like what he's trying to do getting that extra money now.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because the biggest risk, according to the Business Insider, is if it's the primary driver for Dinwiddie to pay his investors back. So he could find himself without the funds to repay bondholders if, you know, misconduct threatens his deal with the team. So like if he were to, you know, be in some sort of horrible circumstance that threatens the, you know, he were to breach his contract in some form.
Yeah, perfect example for our NFL fans. Antonio Brown just breached his contract with the Raiders. They were able to waive him without giving him his guaranteed money. If something were to happen with Spencer in the same light, he'd lose the money and then he'd be screwed.
Yeah, but we know Spencer, that's very, very, very unlikely to happen.
In the NBA, it's less likely to happen, too. The NFL is more about kind of trying to take money away from players, where the NBA, the Players Association, would probably never let that happen unless he did something extremely bad, which everything we know about Spencer, that doesn't seem to be the case.
It will not be the case. And I did see Michael Grady already posting
I saw it.
The little 6-second video. He's like, "So Spence, what are you doing with your money?" And I'm just like, I look forward to hear what his answer is because I just like it's cool to see people do different things and take risks because you know, if this does work out, it could set like the articles that I sort of referenced, it could set a precedent and allow others to explore these opportunities and Spencer could become, you know, the sort of vehicle and leader in that sort of mark. So I hope this works out for him and then some and he becomes just this sort of leader in this sort of, you know, digital investment sort of currency and he just becomes the guy in that sort of sense, and allows all these windows and opportunities and doors to open for a lot of other players.
Yeah, I mean, he could be trying to build his own Iron Man suit. I know he's getting the Iron Man bobblehead this year.
Yep. So, speaking of Nick, what were your favorites? I guess I'll give you some time to open it up on the Brooklyn Nets Twitter page.
I got them open.
Good. All right. I can ask you directly then. What were your favorite looks, or favorite nights that have been projected? If you want to list them out for us, because you've got it open.
Yeah, yeah. I'll list it out for the fans. So first 10,000 fans on October 25th, which I believe is the second home game. I believe that's against the Knicks. Kyrie Irving, replica jersey. That's a really good giveaway. I'm already going to open tonight. I'm going to have to consider that. Then November 22nd, Spider-Man bobblehead. Obviously awesome. November 29th, SpongeBob SquarePants arm and headband set. I'm assuming it would be something related to like the cartoon episodes where he's had the headband and wristband. I don't know. Yep.
And Kyrie's got the SpongeBob shoes.
True. NBA trading card by Panini. First 5,000 kids, 12 and under. That's messed up, bro. I want my trading cards. And that's on December 1st. December 21st, Star Wars night. DeAndre Jordan bobblehead. January 18th, Spencer Dinwiddie as Iron Man bobblehead. January 31st, Notorious B.I.G. bobblehead. And March 6th, Dr. J as Black Panther bobblehead.
Damn, this is some good nights, my dude.
Those are real. This is the best promo I think I've ever seen from an NBA team, at least for me personally. Like, things that I really like. Like, first off, obviously, I want a Kyrie Irving jersey. Spider-Man, one of my favorite superheroes. Iron Man, one of my favorite superheroes. Black Panther is awesome, especially as Dr. J. And then even, like, the Notorious B.I.G. stuff. I know they did that last year as well. So just, like, there's not really any night that I wouldn't want to go to. I'm not a huge Star Wars guy, so that doesn't super interest me. But even the SpongeBob thing is kind of funny.
Like, it sucks for me that, like, I literally will be landing, like, days after the Kyrie Irving replica jersey night. It sort of infuriates me. It almost makes me want to change my flights. Yeah. But, yeah, I think my favorite would probably be the Kyrie Irving one and also Spider-Man because Spider-Man's my guy. And I'm intrigued to see what the sort of marketing teams can sort of come up with and what they sort of make and with those bobbleheads because those are going to become collectibles. And, you know, not to jinx anyone, but hopefully they do a little bit better than Karis LeVert did last season when he had his bobblehead night.
Yeah, I mean, they should give him another bobblehead just so he can redeem himself. I think it was purposely planned that they're doing the Kyrie Irving jersey night against the Knicks.
Oh, that's I love the salt there. I mean, I'm all about that. Just throw the shade and the Knicks fans that'll be rocking up. And like, if you rock up early, you're getting the Kyrie Irving jersey and the Brooklyn Nets ones, my guys. Love it more than anything else.
I wonder what they're going to do with the jerseys, like Knicks fans, because obviously it's in New York and, you know, a lot of the Knicks fans don't want to pay MSG prices, so they go to Barclays Center. Like, I wonder what they're going to do with the jerseys.
They're probably going to be what, like, all the other stupid fans do and burn them or some bullshit like that. And, you know, look, I know we've spoken with some pretty cool Knicks fans on the pod, including Victor and some others. So there are some smart enough, you know, fans that might just use it, maybe sell it on eBay, maybe give it to their niece.
Or just don't take it and let somebody else have it. Like, if you're not going to keep it and throw it out or burn it or something, just give it to a kid who actually wants a jersey or give it to me.
Exactly. A jersey that I'm sure would sell incredibly well would be a Carmelo Anthony jersey, Nick. And my guy, Torian Prince, obviously there was a workout video of him against Danny Green doing some work, looking trim. And Torian Prince did retweet it and wrote, "Guarded him for a month straight. Same Melo, only thing diff is the narrative people throw on his name." We've had Kyrie, it'd be reported that Kyrie and KD are advocates for having him on the team. Now we have Torian Prince sort of subtly going, "Look, Melo's still got game, guys." Do these reports, do these videos, compare the pair. What do you think is a stronger advocate for Carmelo Anthony? A retweet from Torian Prince and talk from and chatter from Kyrie and KD to relevant media organizations, or these workout videos from Chris Brookley?
Definitely from KD and Kyrie. Just, you know, these are your guys on the team. They want to win a championship. They're not going to, like, go out and say to sign a guy that is not good. And just to touch on Torian's point is, I don't think anybody really questioned is like Melo's still a good isolation scorer. Like we all know he can still score in isolation. It's more about can he be a complementary piece because he's just not quite as efficient as he was as an isolation scorer in the past, or just the way the NBA is, you're not going to get as many isolation looks in the mid range. And actually, our guy Matt Esposito wrote a great article on Jason Tatum and how people criticize him in the mid-range, but how you can be an efficient mid-range player is getting to the free throw line. And if you don't get a lot of touches, it's hard to get to the free throw line. So it's just a weird fit for Melo's game in the current NBA. I think that's really where the big issue is.
Yeah, and I think that was sort of, you know, if we were to compare it to like a Dwight Howard, he's saying all the right things. And I think it makes the most sense why they got him, because they want to ease Anthony Davis and sort of use Dwight Howard as the bruiser and the guy that's getting rebounds. You know, obviously there is a wing position there for Carmelo Anthony. And one thing that I'm not sure if I've mentioned on the Buzz before, but I've probably mentioned it to you or someone else, but Melo's a really good rebounder.
Yeah.
And I think that that can advocate him for playing the four position. Like I would say he's a, if he were to be on the Brooklyn Nets, he would be one of the best rebounders on the team outside of the big guys.
Yeah, no, he was always notoriously good for, you know, a small forward rebounding because he always had the girth and the width down there, and he just knew how to position his body. I know he got a little bit leaner, but he still has that size that would allow him to kind of get some boards. He's also was pretty good on the offensive boards when he was on the Knicks too.
Yeah, so like I think that, you know, rebounding has always been a pretty important emphasis and probably one of the most underrated skills in the game. I mean, it almost goes to the wayside quite a bit. So I think that if he is given the right role, obviously, you know, actions speak louder than words, and we haven't seen him prove it in OKC. We haven't seen him prove it in Houston. But, you know, Brooklyn could be his final chance. We spoke about it on the Buzz. It'll be the outlet preview of the Brooklyn Nets season a little bit as well. But you know, I think that, you know, the video was posted a few days ago. I think that these videos don't really add anything. Like you sort of said, like we know what Melo can do and sort of pick up. It's just going to be at the end of the day, is Sean Marks going to be willing to take that risk? How is, you know, Melo going to endear himself to Marks and Kenny and sort of go, look, he said all the right things to Stephen A. Smith and ESPN and all these reporters, but you know, it's another thing doing them. And I think I've said this before, but I'm warm into the idea, especially because of the fact that I don't think the Nets are a championship contender. I know you're higher on that fact because of the fact that you're a bit more optimistic about Kevin Durant returning, but for a minimum contract, for a flyer, maybe give him that Dwight Howard deal, the Exhibit 10, where you put all these clauses in there where it's not guaranteed. Why not?
Yeah, I'm definitely warming to the idea. And I think with the uncertainty at the four position right now, with the whole Rodion thing and Wilson Chandler, you know, being suspended 25 games, the Nets definitely will probably have to make a move at some point and bring somebody in. And if he's in-house and he does well, it's kind of easier to keep him. If he doesn't do well, you know, you maybe move on. And we've kind of talked about this in the past. You could argue the Nets would be the best fit for him since the Knicks, because OKC, Russell Westbrook's really not about playing point guard. Yeah, he racks up the assists, but he's not really like setting up his guys in an amazing position. Paul George isn't really much of a playmaker. He's kind of scoring on his own. So he was really the third option, almost fourth option behind Steven Adams. And then we know in Houston, it's really James Harden and Chris Paul the last 2 years. And even Joe Johnson said being in Houston pretty much took him out of the NBA, I believe. I didn't read the entire quote from him, but I know it wasn't a positive light of playing in Houston and how it kind of impacts players in a negative way.
Yeah, before we do finish, shout out to ISO Joe. Obviously, we would have liked him in a Brooklyn Nets uniform, but heading to Detroit, I think I said to Nick or, you know, JVT Nick, that I thought Detroit would be the team that he would go to because of the role and the amount
most
of minutes
that, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, so that wasn't a surprise. And to have ISO Joe in any sort of uniform, any NBA uniform, it's going to be good for the NBA. Too bad it couldn't be in the black and white, but he'll be a nice fit in Detroit. And, you know, maybe Melo will be good in the black and white because this could be his last opportunity. So if he's not willing to make all those concessions individually, then it could be open for him.
Yeah, and finish at home, you know, from Brooklyn, I think it would be really big. And I think there's a possibility of him, you know, staying with the team for the next season too. You know, like if it works out, he's a player to come off the bench and give you some major pop. And like we talked about, the possibility of winning a championship. But also a quick shout out to another former Net who retired today, Sean Livingston. Resilient career, you know, obviously had that horrific leg injury, was able to bounce back, and think it was the 13-14 Nets with KG and Pierce. So they probably don't have Sean Livingston on that team with the way Darren Williams was playing. they maybe don't make the playoffs and they don't get a first round series win. So always appreciate Sean Livingston, one of probably my favorite players in the league over the last 10 years.
Yeah, and if he didn't play as well as he did then, he wouldn't have got that nice contract from the Golden State Warriors.
And wouldn't have those championships.
He would definitely not have those championships. And, you know, he deserved that contract. He deserved all the success he had. One of the, you know, to face the individual adversity that he's gone through, it speaks volumes to him as an individual. He will be remembered fondly by Nets fans, by Golden State Warriors fans alike. He was really important when they were really sort of balling in 16-17 and 17-8. And, you know, he was, you know, such an integral part of that second unit just to be able to get that mid-ranger, just to create his own offense and, you know, just make the right plays. Was always long, was always, you know, had really good defensive engagement. A wonderful career from a guy who probably could have shown a lot more if his body had have allowed him.
Yeah, a lot of people think that he could have been, you know, one of the top point guards in the entire NBA. And if you really think about it, he was an incredible athlete before the injury. Obviously not a great athlete after the injury, you know, recovering from something right like that, it's just not going to happen. But being able to have the career he had without having the athleticism that got him to that point, I thought was just so crazy. And it would have been just such a what-if situation.
Yeah, speaks volumes to him, speaks volumes in general. But I'm sure we'll be discussing some plenty of other sort of Nets news in the coming days and weeks. You know, like Nick said, you know, it's barely 2 weeks away from media day, and I'm sure something Carmelo will do. I'm sure Kyrie will eventually speak to the media, and Kevin Durant will be in someone's Instagram comments. So the buzzes won't stop.
Yeah, and definitely keep an eye out for the player previews. We'll start dropping them this week as well. Jack, always a pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Google Play, and YouTube.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings. A four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.